Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, and Anne Ball. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and later, Peter Musto and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, President Donald Trump gave a team of female Afghan students permission to travel to the United States for a worldwide robotics competition. The 3-day competition begins Sunday in Washington, D.C. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul had twice denied visas for the Afghan team. It gave no reasons for the rejections. After word that the team had been denied permission to travel to the U.S., some protested on social media. Some members of the U.S. Congress asked the Trump administration to allow the students into the country. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman reported that Trump gave the Afghan team what is known as a parole. It allows the team's 6 teenage members to visit the U.S. for 20 days. Joe Sestak, a former U.S. Navy admiral and congressman, is president of First Global, the organizer for the robotics competition. Sestak praised the Trump administration for finding a way to admit teams from Afghanistan, as well as Gambia, Yemen, Libya, and Vanuatu. He said, "I truly believe our greatest power is the power to convene, to bring nations together where people find what they have in common is greater than their differences." It took a lot just to get the Afghan team members to the competition. Many girls in Afghanistan are denied the chance to go to school. The team members worked for 6 months on their robot, often 7 days a week. Their robot sorts balls and can recognize orange and blue colors, the Associated Press reported. They traveled 800 kilometers from their homes to the U.S. Embassy in Kabul twice to apply for visas. That in itself could be dangerous. On March 31st, a car bomb exploded near the embassy. The explosion killed more than 150 people and injured 400 others. The girls arrived in Kabul Thursday for the long airplane trip to the United States. The team members were excited. "I am very happy. This is such an important trip for us," said team member Lida Azizi. Sestak said, "Teams from Iraq, Sudan, and Cuba are competing, as well as teams from rural areas of Latin America. Teams from 40 Muslim-majority countries are also expected to compete," he said. In all, high school teams from 157 nations are expected at the competition. First Global hopes to make it a yearly event.
A third Vietnamese hostage held by Islamic militants in the Philippines has been killed. Filipino General Sarilito Sobejana confirmed Thursday that troops found the body of Viet Van Chan after a weekend battle between troops and Abu Sayyaf militants. The fighting also left 4 militants and a soldier dead. The body was found in the southern island province of Sulu. News reports quoted Sobihana as saying the victim had suffered multiple gunshot wounds. He said it was not known whether the hostage was killed during fighting or was shot by his captors. The victim was the latest Vietnamese hostage to be killed while in custody of the Abu Sayyaf group. Last week, 2 Vietnamese hostages were found beheaded on the southern island of Basilan. Another Vietnamese hostage was shot by the captors earlier this year. All victims were working as crew members aboard 2 cargo ships when they were captured by Abu Sayyaf militants. One incident happened last February, the other in November 2016. One of the Vietnamese hostages escaped captivity in Basilan last month. But 7 others are still being held by the militant group. Abu Sayyaf is currently holding a total of 21 hostages, including 15 foreigners, according to Philippine military officials. Abu Sayyaf was formed in the 1990s with financial assistance from Al-Qaeda. It split into a collection of factions in the mid-2000s and is now believed to include about 400 members. Several factions have declared allegiance to the Islamic State in recent years. The Counter-Extremism Project says Abu Sayyaf operates from the Sulu Sea Islands in the mostly Muslim southern Philippines. It seeks to set up an independent Islamic state in the region. I'm Brian Lynn.
Human rights activist and Nobel Peace Prize winner Liu Xiaobo died Thursday after a battle with liver cancer. He was 61 years old. Liu spent his last 8 years in prison. He died at a hospital in the city of Shenyang, where he had been moved after doctors learned of his condition. Chinese officials listed the cause of death as multiple organ failure. His final days were marked by a public dispute over his medical care. The Chinese government refused a family request that he be sent to the United States or Germany for treatment. Hospital officials said he was too sick to travel. Liu Xiaobo was one of China's most famous dissidents. In his early years, Liu worked as a teacher and became a popular writer. He was known for his criticism of traditional Chinese culture. He called on Chinese intellectuals to show more individualism. In 1989, he cut short a visiting scholarship at Columbia University in New York City to return to China. There he joined student-led protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. After the Chinese military crushed the protests, Liu was jailed. The government began calling him a black hand for his part in the demonstrations. He was released from detention in 1991. He continued to call for political reforms, but was later arrested. He was sentenced to 3 years in a labor camp. In 2008, Liu and other dissidents released a document known as Charter 08. It called for China to end one-party rule and establish a new republic made up of a federation of areas and political communities. Liu knew the document might lead to his imprisonment once again. He told reporters from Hong Kong, "For those of us in the opposition movement under dictatorships, part of our job is confronting police and spending time in prison. So a dissident not only needs to learn how to oppose oppression, but also how to face the crackdowns and time in prison." Liu was sentenced to 11 years in prison for his part in the Charter 08 movement and other subversive activities. However, worldwide fame came a short time later when he was named the winner of the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize. The Norwegian Nobel Committee praised Liu for his long and nonviolent struggle for fundamental human rights in China. Liu learned of the honor from his wife during one of the limited prison visits she was permitted. He told her that the prize should be dedicated to those who died in the 1989 mass protests and the government's campaign against dissidents. Liu supported changing China through reasoned, nonviolent methods. Shortly before being sentenced in 2009, Liu praised parts of the country's legal system. He praised the polite treatment he received in jail in a speech called, "I Have No Enemies." Liu had 3 years remaining of his prison term when he died in the first hospital of China Medical University in Shenyang. Two doctors, one German and one American, were permitted to see him during his last days. They reported that he, days before his death, had clearly communicated his wish to leave China for treatment. Liu Xiaobo is survived by a son and his wife of 21 years, Liu Xia. She is reported to have said that she was sure of her decision to marry the enemy of the state. Thinking back on their lives in a poem, she said, "I like to draw trees. Why? I like the image of it standing. A life spent standing must be tiresome, you say. I answer yes, but still I must." I'm Mario Ritter.
For nearly 200 years, scientists have wondered about the giant red spot on Jupiter. This week, pictures of the planet show dark clouds moving around and through a large red oval center. These are the closest images humans have ever seen of the spot on the giant gas planet. America's space agency, NASA, sent the Juno spacecraft to Jupiter to gather
scientific data on the solar system's biggest planet. On Monday, Juno flew over the giant red spot, which is a storm larger than our planet Earth. First observed in 1830, scientists think it may be more than 350 years old. The storm measures 16,350 kilometers wide and appears to be getting smaller. For hundreds of years, scientists have been observing, wondering, and theorizing about Jupiter's Great Red Spot, said Scott Bolton. He is the Juno Principal Investigator from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, Texas. Bolton said it will take time for the scientists to process the information Juno is sending back to Earth. Now we have the best pictures ever of this iconic storm. It will take us some time to analyze all the data from not only JunoCam, but Juno's 8 science instruments to shed some new light on the past, present, and future of the Great Red Spot. NASA hopes the information will also tell them what is underneath the storm. Juno was launched on August 5, 2011, from Cape Canaveral in Florida. The spacecraft will continue flybys to get more information for scientists to learn about the planet. I'm Ann Ball.
This is what's trending today. 5 years ago this week, South Korean music artist Psy put his official Gangnam Style music video on YouTube. It went on to become the most played YouTube video of all time. The quirky music video got more views than YouTube's maximum possible view count. The company had to change its coding method. As of Thursday, more than 2.89 billion people had watched it. But just days before Gangnam Style's 5-year YouTube anniversary, another music video finally passed its view count. Wiz Khalifa and Charlie Puth's video for See You Again has now been viewed more than 2.9 billion times. The song See You Again was written for the movie Furious 7. The music video honored Fast and Furious star Paul Walker, who died in a car crash in late 2013. It was published on YouTube in April 2015. Wiz Khalifa said in a statement that he is happy his song has been able to inspire and impact so many lives. Charlie Puth wrote on Twitter that he joined YouTube in 2007. His hope then was to make a video that would get 10,000 views. Just heard about See You Again. Wow, Puth wrote. Gangnam Style is now the second most played video ever. Justin Bieber's Sorry is in third place. Uptown Funk, by Mark Ronson with Bruno Mars is in fourth place. In fifth place is this year's viral hit, Despacito, by Luis Fonsi with Daddy Yankee. The music video was published this January and has already been played more than 2.5 billion times. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Many Americans consider Red House, a song by Jimi Hendrix, to be a great piece of rock and roll music.
There's a red house over yonder, baby.
Today, we will show you how one line from this song can give you a large amount of grammatical information. It can also help you say words and expressions correctly. We will explore the strange case of expletives, words that have a grammatical purpose but no real meaning.
After a recent Everyday Grammar story, we received a question from a teacher. The teacher asked about the grammatical structure of an Ernest Hemingway quote. The line has the words, "There are shadows of the leaves." The teacher wrote,
"My students often ask about sentences such as Hemingway's, 'There are shadows of the leaves,' with the expletive 'there.' What are your thoughts on their sentences that don't include an adverbial? How can we analyze them?"
Now, you might be asking yourself about the relationship between the teacher's question and Hendrix's song, Red House. It turns out that Hemingway and Hendrix have something in common. But before we tell you how, we need to give you some definitions.
The word expletive has two meanings. It can mean something that people say when they are angry or in pain. These are called swear words. We are not talking about them today. Instead, we will be talking about expletives in grammar. They are words that have a grammatical purpose but do not carry meaning. One common place you will find expletives are in expressions called existential there sentences. Do not worry about the difficult name. Existential there sentences are common in American English. Consider the statement, "Mice are in the house." The sentence has the subject mice, the verb be, and an adverb phrase, "in the house." The sentence could be changed to say, "There are mice in the house." This is an example of an existential there sentence. The word "there" takes a place in the sentence, but it has no meaning.
Here is one way to look at the sentence. There is the grammatical subject. It is taking the position that a noun phrase usually does. But it is neither a noun nor a pronoun. It is an expletive. In the sentence, "There are mice in the house," the word "there" becomes the grammatical subject. Mice becomes the logical subject, and the adverb phrase "in the house" remains the same. This structure is common in speaking and writing. Think back to the famous lines from Jimi Hendrix's rock song, Red House.
There's a red house over yonder, baby.
The lines, "There's a red house over yonder," have the same structure as the sentence about the mouse.
Now, you might be asking yourself a question. What is the purpose of there? It fills a grammatical slot, but does not have meaning. Why would writers, musicians, and other people use it? While we may never know the exact reason that Hemingway or Hendrix used there, we suspect it sounded better to their ears. Martha Kohn is an English grammar expert. She notes that English speakers make their voices go up and down while they are talking. They often say the first word or two of a sentence quietly, then raise their voice. She calls this idea end focus. By using there at the beginning of the sentence, the subject moves to a spot later in the sentence, where the voice places stress on it. Listen to the rock song again. Notice how Hendrix uses there to direct the listener's attention to the logical subject of the sentence, Red House.
There's a red house over yonder, baby.
Hendrix could have said, "A red house is over yonder." The sentence would have had a similar meaning to the lines of the song, but it does not sound nearly as good.
Why wouldn't a speaker or writer include an adverbial phrase, such as "over yonder" or "in the house"? First, they may have made a stylistic choice. Adverbials can appear at different places in a sentence. In other words, they are movable. Second, sometimes writers and speakers will not use an adverb phrase when the location is known. Hemingway wrote, "There are shadows of the leaves," after he had already made it clear he was writing about a cafe. Hemingway did not write, "There are shadows of the leaves on the sidewalk next to the cafe," for example. Why not? Hemingway made a stylistic decision. Sometimes stylistic choices do not follow traditional grammar rules or analysis.
English has expletives other than there. These include words such as it and do, writes English grammar expert Max Morenberg. We will not study these expletives today. However, we will leave you with some advice. You should be careful about how you use expletives. In general, one should not use sentences that begin with the expletive there too often. The overuse of there often creates unclear or perhaps uninteresting writing. Remember that the expletive there does not have a meaning. If your goal is to be brief with wording, then you may not want to use the expletive there. That said, try to listen and look for examples of how speakers use expletives. Ask yourself how they build their sentences, and if they could have produced a sentence with the same meaning. There are reasons to use expletives. Sometimes you should use them. Sometimes you should not. We will leave you with words from the musical West Side Story.
There's a time for us. Someday a time for us.
I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.